Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network, TotalTutor.net for more information, Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I only have a few celebrities that I always bring on a regular basis because I connect with them. I'm able to, they have things going on because as my guest and I know, some people really don't have anything to say and why are they on the radio? So, but Sandy has a lot to say and a lot of new things to say. So I want to welcome the program celebrity Sandy Malone from Wedding Island, TLC's Wedding Island, and also the Huff Post and much, much more. Sandy, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Neil? Thanks for having me back.
Oh, absolutely. I'm excited to have you back, especially we had the Spain fiasco, but ready to talk to you about all the cool, new, exciting things. And remember, anybody just follows you on Twitter, Sandy, they're going to see that you have a lot going on for sure and really love to interact with your fans as well. Isn't that true?
Well, I've got a lot going on because I blog for the Huffington Post weddings. I blog for their business section. I also blog for Brides Magazine a couple times a week. I've got a blog in there today with five things a maid of honor should never do at a wedding. And I also have a lot of fun doing reality blogging for Monsters and Critics and a couple other reality sites. So, you know, it makes it fun to put it out there and share it with my followers. And right now, my TV show, Wedding Island, is actually airing in a whole lot of countries. You were just joking about Spain. We're airing in Spain. We're airing in Italy. We're airing all over Latin America. They have Fox International has got purchased the show from TLC, and it is airing in Portuguese, Spanish, Italian, and gosh knows how many other languages all over the world. And we're having a lot of fun making new friends all over the world with that.
Sandy, it's amazing always to hear stories, but you constantly work on your craft. You constantly, as an entrepreneur, know, hey, I'm as good as my last story. And being in PR, that helps you and say, I'm going to keep relevant. I'm going to keep things going. And then the opportunities come right after Wedding Island was over with your run at TLC. Opportunities are coming again. And I know you can't tell us what's going to happen next because of just certain situations. But I know you can't wait to someday get the chance to do your show again because of just the experiences you did on Wedding Island, right?
I think it's going to be exciting. We have some new projects in the works. And, you know, nothing will ever be like my first experience in making a TV show, I hope. But, you know, we learned a lot. And what we learned was people really like seeing the backside of what real wedding planners do. I mean, there's a lot of wedding planners on television, and there's a lot of TV shows about weddings. But those shows like the old Bridezillas, you know, they never had wedding planners. And the shows where you only see the wedding planners in their suits looking very fancy and perfect all the time, that's production. That's not real. You know, when you work with us, you get to see the realities of it. We sweat. We yell at each other, not in front of the clients. We have to fix something with nothing all the time because we're located 7 miles off the coast of another island. So it's really important to, I don't know, take it with perspective that we opened up sort of the back doors and let everybody see what happened. And people are fascinated by that.
Exactly. They're fascinated by it, Sandy, and they just want to know what's going on. Because just think of the stress I had to go through planning a wedding myself and just the craziness. And just think of throw a foreign country, or not a foreign country, but throw a different speaking language, foreign island, meaning just how different things are than the United States, and throw in the specifics of just not knowing if your guests are going to arrive, the weather, all these different things. Everyone that's planned just a regular wedding, this is crazy. And that's why it did so well for TV.
Well, it's, you know what, we work in a bilingual environment every day, but we joke because not everybody's bilingual. It just means there's two languages spoken in our office, just not by everybody. And we work together, and everybody works as a team, and we sit back and laugh now that we've seen what they did with translating the show because they spent a lot of time taking all the Spanish out of the show for the first version of Wedding Island, and then Fox spent a lot of money having that show dubbed back into Spanish. So, you know, I guess it's good because my Spanish isn't perfect, and I hate to lose fans because they think, God, her Spanish is bad.
So then they see it dubbed in it, and then maybe the depends on what Spanish speakers, because of if it's definitely dubbed for Spain, it's a little different Spanish. So you get a different dialect.
Can I tell you a really bad, funny story about that? First year wedding planning, one of my very first big weddings, the bride was from Colombia. The wedding was in Puerto Rico, and about half the guests were from Colombia. And I stood up, and when it was time for the cake, I announced that it was time for the cake in Spanish. And I did all of my announcements in English and in Spanish that night at the request of the bride and groom, because it was a bilingual group, or not completely bilingual group, and they needed the instructions in both languages. Well, I stood up, and I'm not going to use any of the words in just so that I don't get myself in trouble. But I stood up, and I invited everybody and told them the cake was ready. The thing is that the word for cake that we use in Puerto Rico is not the word they use in Latin America. They say torta or pastel. That is not the word we use up here. The word that we use up here is a word down there that is slang for a woman packed a place.
Oh, my.
And I basically stood up in front of 50 people that spoke Colombian Spanish and invited them all to come visit mine. And I didn't just do it once. I did it twice over a microphone. Before somebody realizing what had happened said, Sandy, say torta. And I corrected it, and then I stood there trying to figure out if I could actually dig a hole in the ground and climb into it and bury myself. And I still had another 2 hours of the wedding because I couldn't run away to cry. I was mortified.
And this wasn't on TV, right, Sandy? This was you just in a regular...
This was not on TV! Thank goodness! This was my first year of wedding planning. And by the way, I've learned which words to avoid. But, you know, the thing that's about making a TV show about, at least what we do in the real world, it's so funny because things go wrong all the time, every wedding. The question is, will they go wrong on the guest side or will they go wrong on the back side of the wedding? If something doesn't arrive on time, if I'm having a flower problem, I just need to fix it before the clients ever know there's a problem. The other half of the time, you've got anything from like a medical emergency from a guest to drama with the guest or the family, and you got to fix that problem. And those things are things that the brides and grooms obviously know about, but it's all about how you help them triage the situation that will make them remember the wedding day in the right or in a different way. And so... there's always something going on. You just don't know what's going to blow up on any given day of the week. I mean, on one episode of Wedding Island, they only showed you that we had one helicopter medevac, but we had two helicopter medevacs that week. Same woman checked herself out of the hospital, came back against medical advice, and I had to have her airlifted out the next day, too. And they only have 42 minutes in a television episode, and they had two weddings to show and a lot of things to do, but I was kind of bummed you guys didn't see. I got a helicopter twice in 24 hours. I'm pretty effective.
So how has been the response in all the other countries seeing your show now? How's that been?
You know, I'm not sure what the statistics are on it yet. You know, Fox says it was popular when they put it out. There's a lot of, I would say, some Twitter traffic. What I have learned is internationally, they don't live tweet in the same way that we do in the U.S., so it's harder to follow it. But, you know, I have people emailing me and tweeting me that they're my number one fans from Mexico or my number one fan in Guatemala. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, Fox is advertising me in a Brady Bunch box where I've got Gordon Ramsay's head, like, above into the center of me. And I'm like, hey, that's me. So we're out there with a real list of tremendous shows that Fox International is showing all over the world this year. And we're really honored to be right up there with those people.
So, Ray, it's hard to kind of to judge those things in Europe and in other countries all over the world because they're not as infatuated with Twitter, probably, and just different things.
I don't know. I have no idea. I'm sure there's a way that they are measuring the statistics, the analytics of it. But, you know, something, I don't really understand it. We're hoping everybody's happy. So far, we're getting good feedback. I think there's 3 episodes in. They're going into episode 4 this week. I could be wrong. It could be going into episode 3. But I think they're going into episode 4 this week. So we shall see. You know, I hope everybody loves it. I've got fans in Italy that are having a great time with it and fans in Spain that are having fun with it. And I've got people that are, you know, tweeting us from Latin America that they're thinking the show is hilarious. And they're calling the show Bodas Increíbles in Latin America. So it's really funny because just like when Wedding Island aired, every wedding planner in South America is now, or Latin America, is now hashtagging Bodas Increíbles under their own advertising. So it's hard to tell. Exactly. So it's hard to tell what's going on. You know, it takes a little time to sit there and read it all. But I think people are having fun with it. We're having fun knowing that people are watching it everywhere. And it's fun to watch ourselves in other languages. And so I always go back to my own voice when I scream.
And they wouldn't want you to be with to do the Fox International thing and take on the show if they didn't see the success that you had with TLC. And so specifically, you had good feedback from your experience on the TLC show for our listeners that might not have heard the last interview we had, and that it was a great experience for you and really an eye-opener to see how crazy live tweeting and everything when you're on TLC, right? It's crazy, isn't it?
Well, it was a new experience. I mean, I've never been on Twitter in my life till about the third episode.
Oh, yeah.
So it was, you know, it's an award for my interns giving me a crash course in education and forcing me to learn how to tweet. I wouldn't have been on Twitter at all during the show. So that's one thing I think that, you know, some networks do better than others is really teaching their talent what to be prepared for, because and by the way, I'm not sure which networks do it very well yet, but some of them seem to have more effective cross promotion than others. Bravo seems to really be on the ball with it. You know, whereas I talked to other people who are cast members on other networks who are in the same position I was in, where nobody really gave us any guidance about how to go about it, and we didn't know what to do. I mean, we knew things might be a little crazy when the show aired. We didn't know we would get 50 hits a second on the website and that everything would crash. I mean, we had no idea it would be that level of attention fast.
You're an entrepreneur. It's busy all the time. When would you have time to tweet if you weren't having a show? Think about that. Seriously, Sandy, I mean, all the things that you're busy with and having so many weddings on an island and constantly, you know, putting out fires, you don't have the time to do that. If I wasn't getting paid to tweet for other people, I wouldn't be tweeting, you know, so.
I don't get paid to tweet for anybody. I get paid to blog for some people, but I don't get paid to tweet for anybody.
I'm not tweeting myself. I'm tweeting somebody else. I work for other people.
What I'm saying is I don't do that, but I do a lot of tweeting and a lot of self-promotion of my company, promotion of some of my vendors, promotion of the weddings, and then I promote the publications that are running my blog. And what is it? It's a marketing strategy for 2014. I'm located 7 miles off the coast of Puerto Rico. I'm not in New York. I'm not in my hometown of Washington, D.C. I'm not in Los Angeles. I'm not in Chicago. I can't put myself up and say, hey, anytime you need a comment on weddings, to all the local networks, call me. I'm not there to do that. So what do you do when you're running a business and marketing a business and promoting yourself from the middle of nowhere, literally? And Twitter is an incredible tool, and I've been learning, and I've made mistakes along the way, but hey, who doesn't? I don't have some huge following. I wish I did. It's @SandyMalone_, okay? I wish I had a much bigger following, but what I do have are hardcore followers that are in the field that I work in that respect what I do.
Oh, absolutely.
And I learn a lot from sharing information with those people.
What I was going to say is I wouldn't be tweeting myself if I didn't have a radio show and television show. Yeah, absolutely. I understand. But it becomes addictive, and it's a lot of fun. Twitter and learning the specific nuances of it. And you do a great job. And trust me, just put yourself out there in the right place, right time, right opportunity, and then you'll be at 20, 30,000 Twitter followers in seconds. So let's wait and see what happens next. I think you're ready. You're ready for that next influx of followers. I believe it'll happen, Sandy. So just I really believe that because you're interesting. And just imagine just the first time you're on something and then bam, you know, it is what it is. Okay, so let's go specifically now. So the show Fox International, you can't tell us anything more what's happening next in our process. When can you announce?
I can't tell you what network we're doing anything with. I can't tell you what kind of show we're doing. told you everything I can tell you.
Okay. So we got to have you back again to when you have that news. And I want to be the first to know.
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. Let's go to this education topic that I was absolutely flabbergasted. And I did mention it on my education talk show last night because we talked off air about this, Sandy. The intern stories and the helicopter parents, it just absolutely drives me bananas because I can't believe we're getting to this point in time. I mean, it's very good always to have somebody look over your work, but you can kind of explain that to our listeners that you're just kind of flabbergasted at the college training that these kids are getting, right?
Well, we've had a successful internship program for 5 years, and we usually have a couple of interns here 12 months a year, more or less. And they come in with the wedding seasons. We rotate them out about 4 times a year. Some girls stay 6 months. We've had some that were so good that were graduates that we went ahead and hired them and kept them full time. And they blog. You know, one of the opportunities they get is to guest blog, and people read my blog, so it's great for them. It gives them a portfolio piece. And I spend a lot of time with them, giving them feedback, giving them edits, helping them try to make a piece workable, because I got pretty high standards about what we put on my page. And it came to my attention not long ago that some of my interns were sending their blogs to their parents for editing and review prior to submission. And I was horrified. I was shocked and horrified. I started talking to my account executives who had started as interns, and I learned that this has been going on in my office for years, and that all of these college students, as college students, are taught at their universities not to submit papers to professors until they've had somebody else edit it and read it with them. Some schools say do it with your parents. Some schools, almost all schools, have writing centers, and a lot of them require you to go check in at the writing center and have somebody look at it. Now, I ask you, how do you measure any growth or learning if every piece of paper submitted to you has already been edited by somebody else at a writing center? I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm going to call the professors out as lazy on this one. Yeah, it takes a lot more time to edit a document that is badly written. But that's the whole point. That's why you're a teacher.
That's right.
You're supposed to teach them.
Exactly.
You're supposed to say it. You're supposed to use the darn red pen, and you're supposed to say, no, this isn't correct, and this is why. And you know what? If somebody's that bad, have them come to your office hours. Don't send them to a writing center. And that just disgusted me in the first place. But what really freaked me out was the whole concept that I have people in their 20s sending things to mommy and daddy for review. And I learned that a lot of the kids are doing this, and I wanted to see if it was just my office. So I called my friends who had kids in college, and most of their kids are friends with me on Facebook, and I reached out and I said, okay, what did they tell you at your school? And I didn't tell them why I was asking. And universally, the answer came back, well, we're supposed to have everything looked at by our writing center. And then half of them said they told us to have our parents look at it. Now, those kids, half of them said, but I wouldn't bother because my parents would be like, I'm way too busy, and laugh at me anyway. But the reality is that we are helicoptering from a very young age with the kids. Once upon a time, you had to keep your own assignment book. You had to know when your homework was due. You had to know what page math book you're on your math book you were supposed to do. You had to know when your exams were and when your science project was due. Now they're putting it all online, and the kids don't look at it. Well, mom and dad do. And now parents have to sign off on homework a lot of times at home. And the parents are actually supposed to proofread and go over the homework with the children. I'm sorry, but I thought that's what grading papers was for. Now, I understand that our teachers are underpaid and underappreciated. But you know what? That was true when I was in school 30-some years ago. And you know what? They didn't make my parents be my teacher.
No.
It's ridiculous. We're not giving any responsibility to the kids.
Now, think about this, Sandy. And when I listened to this a second time, I still am flabbergasted, but you do a great job explaining this. When I was in school, I would be able to send it a review of my paper to look over for maybe grammar and spelling, and only content will be my professor. But when it comes to grammar and spelling, I might have someone look it over, but it's not to the point where I'm ready to graduate that I don't need that help anymore. And I think what it goes back to...
When we were in college... The timeline would never have allowed us to have mommy and daddy do our homework. But now mommy and daddy who helicopter through middle school and high school, they're just flying their helicopters and hovering right over the universities. And I got information from the Rochester Institute of Technology, University of Colorado, Catholic University. I mean, this was a pretty, University of Wisconsin. These students, this is pretty much universal. And I think looking at that cross-section of public and private institutions, you can see this is actually what is university standard. And it's horrifying. Now, yes, it's one thing when you've read a paper, you've written a paper, you've looked at it too many times, and you look at your roommate, and you're like, can you proofread this for me? You know what? We all did that in college. And the only thing I have to say is you better hope he's smarter than you are. Okay?
Yes.
That was always a risk you took. I mean, I, for one, none of my roommates were ever journalism majors, so I was better off walking away from something and then reading it with fresh eyes later. We couldn't have gotten our parents' feedback because there was no instant way to get it to them. I mean, we started email for the first time. My class at Ohio State University was the first class to ever register for classes and get grades online in the country in 1995 and 6. So what is going on today is a completely different thing. Parents are so on top of everything that teenagers don't have to pay attention to when their papers and tests are. They don't have to do these things because the school, it's easier for the teachers to put it all online. Syllabuses are online. What's the parents helicopter over everything without the teachers having to deal with re-explaining it to the parents? And then the parents are reminding the kids of what's due. So what happens when they get to college? Well, mom and dad know that little Susie is not prepared to be on her own. So they continue to hover above in their helicopters. And what's it giving us? Is it giving us a whole generation of kids that have no clue what to do when they graduate from college and get the real job?
Exactly.
We have a non-disclosure and confidentiality agreement in my company. And that's to protect proprietary documents. It's not really because of their blogs. But it does apply. And that never occurred to them, and nobody got in trouble for that. But what I realized was, what if these kids were interning on Capitol Hill? What if they were interning at Lockheed Martin or Northrop Grumman? I mean, are you going to do research for a white paper and email it to your mom and dad? Because that won't just get you fired, but, you know, let's just say it's the kind of thing that at the end of the day, you could end up in jail for some of the stuff that people, sensitive information, sending it out of the office. And no one is teaching these kids this. I mean, I interview so many people. I see so many resumes. I get pink resumes with swirls on them. Constant ridiculous graphics with absolutely no useful information whatsoever. Who is telling them to do this?
It's the, Sandy, you got to go back. You got to go back to Bush's No Child Left Behind. You got to go far back to where education became teaching to a test. And kids were forgotten about teaching to write. There's a specific way to teach kids to write now, because remember, I'm an educator. And that way is basically formatted for the test. And then when you ask kids to write on their own and use their own ability, they either cheat or they have someone write it for them because they have never been taught the basics of writing. And I don't know how old you are, Sandy. I'm 41. And
I am 41 as well, Neil.
Okay. But I went to Catholic schools, and I didn't go to any public schools. But I would say in a lot of ways that I wasn't formed as well as people 10 years that are 50 in their 50s writing-wise. They were more pushed harder, I thought. But that was your major. That's something you really enjoyed. You probably could have gotten extra help from other people in different things, but yet you had a passion to be a journalist. You wanted to write. You enjoyed writing, correct?
Yeah.
There are people that can't, some people can't stand writing. I'm just starting to like to write, and it's because.
Well, I can't stand math, but I had to take the classes, and I went to a Catholic school too, and at every test, every paper I signed, on my honor, I had neither given nor received help, blah, 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 because we had an honor code. And there's no do your own work ethic out there anymore.
Right, I agree.
To do their own work.
I couldn't stand hiring tutors to work for me that were in their 20s. They were just incompetent in so many aspects. I'd rather just do it for myself, charge 3 times a month, much, and be done with it, not deal with them. So you have them under your foot in interns, and you talked about, again, you have a high standard to hire people, correct? You really meaning to take on as interns. It's a tough process, and you're looking for the very best.
Correct? Well, the truth is we vet carefully and we look for people who have done their homework on the company that they're applying to. And we look for, you know, we look for typos in your cover letters. We look for you spelling my company's name wrong in the cover letters. But we also look at the creative ones. I mean, one of my favorite interns, her resume and cover letter got my attention because she'd written the whole cover letter as though it were a wedding invitation. I mean, it was creative and it was spelled correctly.
You know,
these are the things that nowadays will get you to pay attention. Somebody with a less than stellar resume can get a job with a really fantastic interview. And somebody with just okay resume and okay interview can get a job with a really amazing reference. But you've got to have something amazing out of your references, your interviews, or your resume, cover letter. One of those three pieces has got to knock people's socks off. And if it doesn't, then you may as well go ahead and apply for that barista job and see if your parents are going to let you live in the basement.
And but a lot of them are doing that, Sandy. And I'm glad you finally are seeing this. And you got to check out more of what's going on in education at my website, totalturner.net, and listen to some of the education shows. It's really a sad state of affairs that we're in. And looking at it in so many ways, and I agree with you in all this, is you're looking at a lot more female resumes than male resumes for your internships. Imagine if you're getting male resumes. I'm telling you right now, male education, we don't evolve for a while. And then if we are in a certain aspect, in a certain field, we'll do fine. But when it's talking about specifically the way things have changed, where, you know, oh, daddy will get me this interview with a handshake. Now it's all about writing communication. And if you thought some of the girls' writing is terrible, see some of the boys.
Well, one of my account executives just wrote a blog that I posted this week that was it's her four tips to success for new graduates. And she was, because she's mad. She's been out of college a little over a year. She did an internship here, and now she's been at the company for a year. And she's sick of people asking her, how'd you get such a sweet job? You know, what was your in? She's sick of her friends asking her that. She didn't have it in with me. She sent me a resume. I called her for an interview. Her references were stellar. That's how she got hired. When she worked here, she never complained about the hours. She was always cheerful and smiley. She did everything she could do. When she screwed something up, she didn't screw it up twice. And proved herself to be absolutely amazing. And she's angry and frustrated at all the kids from our own generation who assume that she must have pulled strings to get here.
Right.
You know, you said I probably don't see a lot of guy resumes. Well, I actually do. And it's not because it's a bunch of gay guys that want to be wedding planners, although I get those, and that's fine. But what's more horrifying is the resumes I get from these boys who didn't actually read the internship description. And they don't realize they're applying to be wedding planners.
That's what I'm talking about, Sandy. We really have to look at Gen Y and be really scared and be really afraid. Afraid that especially if we continue to allow this to be an entitlement generation, we all know how many people are paying taxes, Sandy, and so we have to get out there and talk about it. And so great to get a celebrity like yourself to give us this perspective. Where can we find information on you and learn more about you and really follow you on Twitter and all?
Follow me on Twitter at @SandyMalone_. You can follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/SandyMaloneWIV. And then we've got SandyMalone.com and SandyMaloneWeddings.com. So check them all out. And we're posting new blogs from the Huffington Post and Brides Magazine and Pridezillas and Gay Marriage Watch and all the other people I write for. And do not miss my reality snarks on Monsters and Critics as well.
Well, you're doing tremendous things, and I can't wait till you can tell us the next project. And you are going to be one of the only monthly guests if you're invited to do that. One is I have Catherine Kramer, Dad Stanley Kramer. She's always interesting things. And only the few others that ever get the opportunity to come on my show all the time, and you're definitely going to be one of them because you're funny, it's easy, it's fun, and thanks again for calling, Sandy.
Well, thanks. I'm honored, Neil. You have a great week.
All right, you take care now. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor. Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And also Google+, Neil Haley. And there's so many cool places you can find me. And I just love the Celebrity Show. And one thing I would say that I need help on is style. My wife would flat out say that. Neil, you wear the boring, when you're going out, you know, meeting clients, you have the boring blue suit jacket, and really when we're going out to dinner, I'm not, you know, putting out certain things. So I said, let's bring a style expert on the show who's a celebrity. So I want to welcome the program Marcus Stewart, style expert, Dukes of Melrose on Bravo TV. Marcus, thanks for calling, and I definitely need some style help for sure. So thanks. I'm excited
well,
to talk to you.
Well, the doctor's in the house. Well, I'm so happy to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's funny. I was on with style experts, and they were trying to give me some style. I said, well, you got to give me some opportunities to wear some of the clothes of or I have to come out and meet you with you and say, hey, I'm 6'10", 280 pounds. You know, a big athlete
right.
type of size guy, and I'd love to, you know, get help from the fashion doctor for sure. So basically, Marcus, tell me, have you always wanted to be a style expert? Is this something when you woke up when you were like 6 years old, you were interested in styling, or is this something that developed over time?
Well, I think I was 7 and a half. No, I'm just joking. you know, I can't say that. I will say this. I started modeling when I was 12 years old. And from that, it sort of catapulted into all of these other, the fashion world sort of came to me that way. My mom was a model back in like the 70s. And, you know, she's always been a great, she sews a lot. And I just always inspired by what she did. We were good friends. I can say I really got it, honestly. That's the way it came to me. So when I was about 12, I started modeling around town in New Orleans and a lot of local gigs. I got a big agent in New York, and my mom actually did not let me go to move to New York. She didn't want me to, I think, you know, end up crazy and famous and, you know, with like no sense of direction. So she canceled those appointments. I never got to really go to New York and take it to a huge level when I was younger. But when I turned 15 or 16, I moved to L.A., went to fashion school at FITM in Los Angeles, and sort of that's when everything sort of was reborn again. The fashion, the modeling, everything just came to life sort of when I moved back to L.A.
So interesting that you learned a lot of the business being part of it, meaning as a model and learning the things, but now you want to help others through that by going to fashion school and stuff. So when you went
sure.
to L.A., you learned it probably from the best, because L.A. brings, I'm sure, a big fashion between New York and L.A., where there's a lot of
yeah.
fashion experts to learn from, for sure.
Yeah, so the great thing, what you just said is 100% true. So as a model, you don't really have that much of an opinion. And I have always had an opinion. So it's very hard when you're on one side of the camera and you have these stylists and you have these photographers and creative directors and agents who are molding you to be something. And then with the other side of you, you're really creative yourself. You've worked for Vogue magazine. You've worked for GQ magazine. Written for these publications, you've dressed celebrities, you've done these other things. So it was always a battle within me, even when I was younger, because I started, you know, working in fashion very young. My first job was 15. And then my mentor, Andre Leon Talley, who was like the godfather of fashion. He used to work for Vogue. He was the editor at large of Vogue magazine for up 10 years under Anna Wintour. I met him when I was 17 or 18, I believe, and that changed my entire fashion life. So I got started really early. I was blessed to, you know, have sort of a great entrance into the industry while I was still modeling. So it was very hard for me to stay focused only on modeling because I had so much other things to do and say in the world of fashion.
Right. Right. You wanted to not. So when you're modeling, you want to tell the cameraman, hey, or the people dressing you, hey,
yeah.
I want to wear these clothes, not those clothes.
And I want to see you from this angle.
Exactly. You wanted to be involved in
yeah.
the whole thing. And that's kind of why I was in wrestling. I wanted to get involved and learn all the ins and outs of things. And I enjoyed more of the stuff behind the scenes doing TV and radio, which led to when I was in education to do the same thing and kind of learn all the ins and outs of radio like I've done, and also television the same way, where things go. And I can teach people and say, hey, this is what you should do. And that's great, because then, you know, at one point in time, modeling is going to be something that, you know, you're not going to be the flavor at one point. At one point,
yeah.
you're going to be too old. able to do the kind of modeling, and you want to do more. You want to be an entrepreneur. So you had that entrepreneurial mindset. You graduate from your fashion school. You go out. But I want to go to the story, which is the huge part, because I think this is what created your overall brand, is this opportunity on the Dukes of Melrose on Bravo TV.
Yeah.
Now, how did this happen? Did you go for this cattle call, or did they come and approach you?
No, they came and approached me, actually. This is a great story. I was literally, I was a buyer. I worked for Prada as a model greeter. Then I worked for Prada in retail. I worked for Dolce & Gabbana as in retail, then as a visual merchandiser. So I had done all of these different things, and I moved to New York to only model. I was giving up all of this fashion stuff, and I said, you know what, I'm only going to model. Okay. So moved here to model, then that's when this opportunity to be a buyer for this store called Decades, which is based in L.A., came about. So I was friends with the owners, and it was just a great, you know, relationship, so I took that position. About a year into that position is when they were approached by Bravo TV to do a reality show. And that's when this whole thing came about. So I actually was not a part of this initial cast. I actually was in Europe when they began filming. I was flying back to Europe, landed in JFK in New York, and got a call from True Entertainment, which is a production company that handles a lot of Bravo's content. And they're like, hey, is this Marcus? And I'm like, yeah, so what's going on? And they're like, hey, we heard about what you do at Decades. We would love to, you know, come in and have a meeting with you about the reality show. I know that you know about it, but I was never in the running, is what I'm saying. I was the East Coast buyer. The show was filmed in L.A., so I was never in the running to really be a part of the show, and I didn't really care because I didn't want to do reality, to be honest with you. But when they approached me, you know, especially at 20, I think I was 23, I have nothing to lose. I figured, you know what, let's give it a shot. And also my boss really wanted the opportunity. And I'm a person, I'm loyal, and I wanted to be a part of that, to help those guys reach where they wanted to go. So that's actually how the show came about. I did a testing with Bravo TV for literally like an hour. And within the next 2 days, I packed up my entire apartment in New York, moved back to L.A., and, you know, they relocated me and, you know, gave me a rental car, and I started filming Dukes of Melrose for, like, 3 months in Los Angeles. So that's how that story was born. I didn't approach them. I never wanted to be on a reality show. I was just sort of really working every day in fashion, like, really living the life that you see people, I don't know, sort of on these reality shows talk about,
right,
or, you know, even perpetrate. You know, I was working in the industry, so I never thought, like, oh, I want to be on a reality show. If anything, I thought it would sort of ruin what I was working towards. But what you will see is it actually birthed a whole nother, like, a whole new monster, which is a good thing, from being on the show. So, yeah, that's sort of how that whole Dukes of Melrose thing came about.
All right, we're with Marcus Stewart, style expert from Dukes of Melrose on Bravo TV. And I guess finally you had to say yes. And I think you're happy you made that decision just because it got your name out there much more. And that's the thing when you get on television, especially something big like a Bravo or a TLC or the ones that, you know, get so many viewers, that they finally now you're going to be seen by not just fans, but also people that are in the same field with you, want to work with you, are even higher ups that you want to have a conversation with. All those people open up because you do this, for sure.
Exactly. You know, you're really on it. You know what you're talking about. Because this is exactly what happened. So I say yes to do the show. I do it, never thinking any much of it. Didn't prepare, didn't have a manager, didn't have a website even up, had nothing. My social media was very sluggish, and I was very personal and private guy as it comes to, you know, people now, especially celebrities, they post everything, where they, what hotel they check in, where they're shopping. I never was into that. So I was, because I wasn't into that, I was a few steps behind. But Bravo TV is such a huge, TV network that by me being on there, it really helped, you know, create The Fashion Doctor, which is what I'm doing now. the show was based around my bosses and myself going into these celebrities and socialites' homes and taking their exotic and luxury goods, reselling them to the general public. So taking from, you know, the really rich and selling to the regular people, really, at a discounted rate. So things, you know, an Hermes bag that a person cannot go into the store and just get.
Oh, wow.
And if they can get it, they can't get that, you know, they can't get that specific crocodile.
See, I would have liked that show. I keep up with some reality shows, Marcus, but I would have been interested in that because that's almost like celebrity homes, like an MTV Cribs in a way. Yeah, you're going to these really exotic types of items that you get to resell. And that's what brings the fun part about it is once you find those things from celebrities. So what types of celebrity homes were you in and what types of things did you purchase to go ahead and sell, resell?
Well, you know what? I will say this. I can't say every celebrity's home that I've been in to because we signed.
Oh, okay. You can't say, but you tell us some of the stuff you found. I didn't know that. Oh, that would have made it more fun. Yeah. It would have said, oh, yeah, I was just in Vince Neil's home and I just found this nice fur coat and we sold it for, I guess I didn't know. So it's just like you're getting to go in the homes and you have to guess.
Not,
yeah.
It's not that easy. I will say this, because there were a lot of celebrities that were on our program. The ones that were a really big hit was what's her name? She's great. Vita Von Teese.
Okay.
She's a huge person who shopped at the store a lot. Jody Watley.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Who was, you know, huge and she's a lovely lady. Phyllis Diller, actually, it was her last appearance before she passed away. She was on the show. Who else was there? Ashley Madowick was a person who was on the show. She found her wedding dress on our show. Melissa McCarthy. Garcelle Bouvet, Rachel Harris, there's a bunch of people. So those are the people who all appeared on the show. And some of those people you actually got to see inside of their homes, the closets. So, you know, Phyllis Diller and Dita Von Teese, you got to see her intense closet. In New York, I dealt with more of the socialites. You got to see, you know, you think these celebrities have money, but social world is a total different element, and it's also a total different taste level. So you really got to see, besides the money, you got to see a lot of beautiful things done extremely well with a lot of grace and elegance and history. So, you know, that's what I loved about the opportunity. And, you know, like I said, from that, it's taken me to where I'm at now, which is the fashion doctor. From doing that show, I started to get a lot of, who is this guy? You know, I wasn't the main person. It was about my boss, my two bosses that were the owners. But I was on the show so much. And, you know, when you're this tall and brown skin and good looking, people will take notice. So that's sort of what happened. All jokes aside, I just think it was, you know, it was a good setup. Bravo TV was really good. And people wanted to know, who is this other guy? Who's this person? What does he do? And people just started hitting me up on Twitter and Instagram, and I started to create a community of people, and that's how The Fashion Doctor was born. The show did not get picked up for a second season, and when that happened, I created my own brand, The Fashion Doctor, which is what I'm doing now. I go into meet with fashionably ill patients. I examine their lifestyles, their wardrobes. I check their vital signs, basically, to see what type of fashion health they're in. And then I prescribe a healthy solution. I give them a prescription to live a fashionable and healthy life, all starting from within them, figuring out what they want to be, who they want to be, how they identify themselves, and helping it to showcase on the outside. So it's a three-step program. It's better than, you know, going to Alcohol Anonymous. and it's pretty easy. It's fun. It's bigger than fashion. That's the thing. It's more about having fun and making this a conversation and getting to know the people who I'm dealing with, not making fashion so standoffish. I've worked for the best of the best. A lot of times, that's great. That's what, most people, that's all they really want, is to work for a big fashion company. But I've done that. And what I've noticed is we're missing contact with people. Sure, celebrity world is great. All of these things are awesome, but we're really missing that touch, that element of how can I really service you? How can I really help you? What's going on before you put on this product dress?
Yeah. So,
and that's my calling now.
So, Marcus, what you saw is working for that company, what you were able to do is create the brand being on the show, and people liked you, thought you're different than maybe other people on the show, and you created a brand right after the show was canceled, said, hey, I'm going to go on and do it myself, and I have enough of the notoriety to build the brand and start the business from that point. And now you're like, you created this whole thing. So if you were saying to me, I was some person that you wanted to create a new fashion outlook to me, what would you do first? Kind of tell us. So that would be a great thing for our listeners out there that are saying, I need to contact Marcus, or I need to go and see what's going on. What would you do for me? I know you can't Google me right now and look at me, but kind of just tell me specifically how you would look at this fashion thing. Go ahead.
So this is what I like to do. And my middle name is Holistic, so everything is comfortable. So the first thing I want to do is, before I get, meet with you, of course I do my background. I do some Googling. I call around. I see who maybe we have mutual friends. Maybe we've been around each other socially. I found out more about you. Once I get to your place, we may meet. And you know what? I want to have you'll meet me somewhere. And I'm going to have your favorite drink. If you don't drink, I'll have you a coffee. I'll have you whatever makes you most comfortable. We sit down and we literally just talk. Before we talk about fashion, we just talk about what attracted you to working with me. You know, what can I provide in exchange for you before we get to your closet and where you're currently at fashion-wise. And from there, we then, I'm taking notes, mental notes and also physical notes. And I am examining what's happening. How do you look right now in front of me? What is it that is your personality different from the way you look? You know, are you a person who's very, very introverted, but you are dressing in a very provocative way that is, your husband's upset and like is causing issues? Or is it reversed? Are you, a very, outspoken person with a great personality and you want to be an actress and you're booking great jobs, but something is not tipping over to the next point? And it could be your look, maybe. It could be your look, So that's the initial part.
Exactly.
After
so
we do that,
let me jump right with questions, Marcus. The first question I would look at is, now, if you're talking about me, you should check out what I like, and because you work with men and women for sure. And so you're looking at specifically who I hang out with, what look, if I'm aspiring, wanting to be a reality TV star or look a little bit more than just the average 40-year-old and want to kind of look hip and cool, you're going to look at all these specific things, but you're also going to look at the outlook at, do you need to lose weight? Are you eating right? Are you sleeping enough? You using, if you're a female, are you using the right makeups to kind of do this? Are you over tanning? All these different things that you look at, then get to your closet and say, oh my gosh. So I guess step two would be, after going to the closet, first is learning about the person, learning about what their aspirations. Why are they hiring you as a style expert? Why are they saying, I need you to help me because I'm busy running this multi-million-dollar corporation, or I'm busy doing XYZ charities and foundations. And so you come in, get that evaluation by just meeting the person. Then you go to their home, right? That's the next step, isn't it?
Exactly. Then we go to the home, and then that's when we go more into a vulnerable state of their actual closet, where they are fashion-wise right now. So we talk about, how does the closet look? Is it organized? Is everything outdated? Is everything super classic and minimal? Or do you have great pieces, but the fit on everything is awful? Or is your fit on everything, really good, but you're picking the wrong silhouettes? How are your accessories? Do you have any? Do you have only one pair of shoes that you're basing your entire looks off of? Or do you have a nice balance? And what does everything look like? How is it different hangers? Is it cluttered? Is it, not approachable, your closet? Sometimes we set ourselves up for failure by the way we organize things around us. How about that? So we go in and we examine all of these things. And it's me, and I have an assistant, but for these type of things, it's just me and the client. One-on-one.
Do you think organization and order are important in when you want to pick the right fashion thing every day?
It's almost as important as feeling good about yourself or picking the right outfit is being able to. If nothing's organized, it's a headache. We're humans. We wake up late. We have deadlines. We have kids. You know, we have a wife or a husband. We have things we have to do. So if things aren't organized, you're setting yourself up to be a disappointment. And you're basically setting yourself up to not be as successful. So if I come in and I can change that, you know, in one day, if I can change your entire closet around and make things easy, put your summer things up when it's not summer, you know, leave your fall things out, do a total closet cleanse. We call it a closet detox, where we take out the things you don't need. They may be good, but you don't need them right now. And we store those things away until next season, and then I come back and, you know, redistribute. So that's very important, is only having what you need in front of you, because it keeps your mind clear and it's easy to get when you need to get dressed. All of my clients, all of your listeners, they're busy people. Even if you're a stay-at-home mom, you're busy. You have other things to do. So I go in and I detoxify that closet to make it super easy for you to get dressed. And, you know, you literally, you know where everything is. We have lookbooks that we've created by this in the step three, and you're ready to go.
So what's a look? So basically then you create the plan. That's it. We got it.
So then we create the plan. So now we were at step two with a closet and going in. And then the third thing is I'm going to then sit down with you one-on-one and tell you what we're going to do. You just said it. We create the plan. This is the meal plan. This is what's going to get you healthy again. You know, this is where you're going to get your minerals, all of those good things. Is how can we do this? Now, that may include taking some things out of your closet, adding some things to your closet. Altering your outfits. It may also include total, like we said, a detoxifying of the closet, taking things away, putting them up, giving some things to Goodwill, some things you may have had for 30 years and you're just holding on to it because that ex-husband gave it to you, but it's bad energy. Why do you have it if you're not using it and you're not married to him any longer?
Exactly.
So, like, those, a lot of those type of things really hinder people from moving forward in other aspects of their lives.
So what kind
of... So what I do is I'll go in and I'll create looks. So this could be post. If some of my clients, a closet is not bad. They have the actual clothing. They just need help identifying what route to take. So let's say that client. I'm going to then go in and I'm going to create outfits for her, him or her. And I'm going to create things that they never thought possible was in their closet. They've never even thought about mixing these two prints together. They never thought about using this dark denim with, you know, a really cool dressy top and a cashmere daytime cardigan with heels. They never thought about mixing these different elements. And a guy never thought about taking his suit and breaking it up to being able to wear it during the daytime casually or at nighttime. How do you transition from day to night? I teach all of these different things: transitioning, dressing your body type, dressing your age, and also dressing for what you want to be. So once we figure out all these things, I create a lookbook, which means I have a mannequin. I dress the mannequin in looks, and I have a photographer come in and we take pictures.
Oh, wow.
So this can take a day, you know, depending on the budget, of course, and all these different things. It can take a long time to photograph all these different looks. And then I basically give you an amazing binder that's been created just for you with different looks that you can go to. Now, this doesn't mean this is what you're limited to. This just means when you need an outfit, when you say, you know what, I need an evening outfit, let me go to the evening chapter. Okay, this is in my meal plan. I can do this. This is easy. I know where this dress is. I know where these shoes are. I know where this necklace is. I know that my hair should be straight for this with a part down
exactly,
the center.
Yes.
And I should have lighter makeup on. So everything is done. Yes, this is work. Yes, it is just as important as a nutritionist, but it's important because it just makes life a lot more easier. Now, this is an extensive what I would do. Also, there's some people who just want to go shopping. They don't need all of
exactly.
this. They just want to say, okay, come with me for 5 hours, let's go shopping. Or you go shopping and bring everything back to my house, and I sign off on what I want you to keep. And we work with all budgets.
So, Marcus,
just because
yeah.
so this sounds... Yeah, go ahead.
No, so that's okay. I just wanted to jump in real quick before we're running out of time, close to running out of time. Now, what about, Marcus, if you have a situation, ma'am, where you say to yourself, okay, what kind of clientele are you looking for? Are you looking to be a stylist to celebrities? Are you looking at any person that's looking for this opportunity to consult with you? Because again, you're not going to have thousands of people to work with. You might have hundreds, but it's not because constantly you'll be filled with these great ideas for sure.
Yeah. You know what? I'm all about quality over quantity. I've worked with a lot of celebrities as an assistant at Vogue. I've worked with, you know, Katy Perry for GQ. I've worked with Naomi Watts for the cover of Vanity Fair Italia. You know, the list goes on and on and on. A lot of different, Blake Lively I've worked with for different things outside of styling. I'm not so caught up in if they're a celebrity or not. What I'm caught up in is who wants to be better? Who sees value in what I can offer? And, of course, that comes with a price. There's cost for these things. But I like to work with everyday women. My person, everyday woman, everyday guy. That's why I'm the person that's dressing America. You know, you don't, not only celebrities go to the doctor. Everyone goes to the doctor.
Exactly.
You know? So, of course, I do special things where I'm on TV programs and I'm doing corresponding. I'm working on something right now for Fashion Week, which I can't talk a ton about. But there's a lot of things that I do with celebrities all the time. But what my goal as a fashion doctor is to now bring that to your homes, bring that to your radios, bring that to the people, and let it be something that everyone can, you know, think, wow, I can get this. I can get the same look. You know, that one of my clients, PJ Martin from Maroon 5, I dressed him for, you know, his shows. I do his album packaging. I helped him with that, a lot of different things. So how can I get this guy who's done all of these great things into my home? It's easy. I have a website, you know, marcus-stewart.com. That's marcus-stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T.com. All of my contact information is on there. And also, I'm really active on my Instagram, The Fashion DR. That's The T-H-E-F-A-S-H-I-O-N-D-R. I talk to all of my, followers on Instagram. And, you know, we can always set up something this way. I'm working on launching an amazing website, which has been in the works for a while. And it's basically going to chronicle my life, going into these homes of these my clients, having these sessions with them.
That's great.
The street begging that I do as well, showing people how you can change your look, you know, in less than 10 minutes with a few items that are going to be in my medical kit, you know. And also the travels. I just got back from Africa, like literally, I don't know, 5 hours ago. And I did an amazing shoot in Ghana. And it's going to chronicle, you know, these local designers, local talent, and me modeling and all of these things.
Fantastic.
So everything is really coming together. And I'm happy to be able to offer it to people and to really connect with the everyday woman, the everyday guy. That's who I'm targeting.
Well, fantastic, Marcus. Definitely we'll check you out in all those different areas. And best of luck. And I know you have other projects you can't tell us about, but you'll have to come back on the show when you have some big news for us, especially if you're going to go back on television again, for sure.
It's happening for sure. You know what? I actually have a call after this with someone to chat about what's next. There's been a lot of offers. It just has to be the right offer.
Exactly.
Because, you know, I'm very happy in what I'm doing now, but I do want to return to TV. I really love that outlet, and I'm excited about the different opportunities. So definitely within the next few weeks, I should be able to come back, or next few, you know, no longer than 2 months. I would love to come back and chat with you.
Absolutely. You got to just tweet me out, text me. You're welcome anytime on the show. So thanks again for calling, Marcus. And best of luck.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
All righty.
Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network, and we'll be back in just a moment.